Welcome to California Burning, a co-production of North State Public Radio, made possible by generous contributions from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. This is the third episode in a five-part series looking into the issues around wildfire that we've been experiencing in California and the West in general. All five episodes are available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts or at californiaburning.net. The first episodes in this series were about past management practices in our forests and how they affect wildfires. We also learned that the Native Americans had maintained these forests for thousands of years with prescribed fire. Then, during the period of Western expansion, first large tracts of old-growth forests were cut. Then, the use of fire was eliminated from forest management with nothing in its place to maintain them. This caused the new forests to grow back with overly dense stands of small trees with accumulating brush and forest litter, like dead branches and pine needles, which burn and spread fire easily. But the purpose of this episode is to find out what are the best practices for managing our forests now, given their current conditions and our societal needs? The very topic of maintaining our forests is a difficult one. It seems to put the environment in which we live against the economy, which keeps our society functioning. Unfortunately, with the conversation framed this way, no one concedes anything, and therefore, nothing changes. So this conversation doesn't even happen much anymore, but it's a conversation that needs to happen because catastrophic wildfires are destroying our forests and threatening our communities around the state. Culminating with the Camp Fire that burned 90% of the town of Paradise, destroying over 19,000 homes and killing at least 86 people.
The Camp Fire is kind of this defining moment in all of our careers in that it seems like everything changes now. Lots of things that we didn't expect to happen happened.
This is Zeke Lundar.
I'm a geographer working on wildland fire issues in Northern California. And I use mapping and the other tools of a geographer to help people understand the different ways that fire operates on our landscapes.
Zeke's going to teach us about how fire operates on a landscape level later in the episode. And we're going to talk to a variety of people who are managing forests in California, from forest rangers and firefighters to private landowners and timber companies. And that's the point of this episode, to get a better understanding of fire and how human management of these forests affects the way fire behaves. If we don't understand this basic knowledge, we'll never solve our wildfire problems in the state. On this episode, we are going to be focusing a lot around Northern California, but the lessons around fire and fire behavior are universal. Welcome to California Burning, Managing Our Forests for Fire. So yeah, managing forests in a state with 40 million people will be tricky. We have lots of stakeholders here, both public and private, who may have completely different goals for their land. But before we talk to those with the most at stake, I think we need to understand some basics of wildfire behavior. Let's go to Humboldt State University in Arcata, California, which has a highly regarded forestry school. It's nestled in the redwood forests of Humboldt County. They have a one-of-a-kind wildland fire lab with the mission to conduct fire research to better understand and manage fire-adapted landscapes.
We're dealing with a few legacies. One is the legacy of fire suppression and the legacy of logging, right? We've altered a lot of these forests.
This is Dr. Jeff Kane. He's the director of the fire lab and associate professor of fire ecology and fuels management at Humboldt State University.
You know, older forests tend to be more resistant to even wildfire today, but they can also be susceptible. But we have a lot of young forest. We have a lot of dense forest. And that's largely reflective of our past land management choices.
Again, to state those choices bluntly, they were first, cut all the big valuable trees and get out of there. Then leave it alone and let the forest get overgrown. Now we have these overgrown forests, and we need to relearn how to predict fire in them.
So the primary factors that influence the fire behavior, how hot it is, how fast it moves, how tall the flames are how much surface fuels you have. So in the absence of fire, those surface fuels build up, And so you have more surface fuels over time, and that contributes to greater flame lengths and greater fire behavior. The other part is how densely packed the fuels are. And so we, from the science of it, we talk about two things. One is the crown bulk density. The younger the trees, the denser the crowns are. They're closer together. Right. There's more fuel per unit volume area. And so that can allow for the spread of a crown fire by having young, dense forests. And then the other part with young forests is that they have their crowns are typically lower to the ground. So that distance between the surface fuels and where the crown fuels are available, that can transition from a surface fire to a crown fire and then spread. So what we see here in the Northern California is that oftentimes where you have these young plantations, where maybe they're even denser than they would have regenerated naturally, that you could carry a fire very easily. And those areas tend to be, you know, the more severe fires where you have lots of tree mortality.
Compare this to a more biodiverse older forest.
And that for older forests, they tend to have more varied structure. They have larger trees that are often much higher off the forest floor.
Trees' lowest branches, we often call them ladder fuel, because a ground fire can use them to climb into the tree canopy, which then spreads fire fast. But old growth trees' lowest branches don't start until 10, 20, 30 feet off the ground. Way too high for flames to reach in most ground fires. Plus, huge trees have bark that are inches thick and don't burn easily. Studies of tree rings have shown that 100-plus-year-old trees have survived many fires throughout their lives.
All of this, I should, is couched by what the conditions are during the fire, whether it's the campfire, the car fire, Santa Rosa fires. These were pretty extreme weather events. High wind speeds, really dry conditions, and it's just a recipe for severe fire.
And of course, the species that make up these forests also make a difference in how frequently these forests want to burn. And this is where a lot of Jeff's research goes. He burns different tree litter, dried pine needles, twigs, and branches of different species. And he's found that species that tended to exist in more fire-prone forests have litter that burns easier.
A classic ponderosa pine or Jeffrey pine, they have these really long needles that builds a nice fluffy fuel bed. You know, the idea is that, you know, it facilitates the spread of fire. So, yeah, you get higher flame lengths, but it's more rapid combustion. So the idea is that, yes, it's going to get hot if you're a tree, but it's not going to be hot for very long. And these species often tend to have really thick bark, and so they can withstand. Other species like... An example would be like lodgepole pine, which tends to have shorter needles, more compacted fuel beds, doesn't burn very well as a surface fire, and they tend to historically had lower frequency, less common fire, maybe every 30 to 100 years, and they have really thin bark. And so it's showing us the ecology of California and more broadly the western U.S. conifer forests. And it seems to correlate with what we know about the fire history for these species.
Fire history varies considerably from place to place, with some forested areas regularly burning every 5 to 10 years, while other areas traditionally maybe only saw fire once or twice a century. We leave Jeff's office and head over to the fire lab.
This is the Wildland Fire Lab. Basically, we have a large fume hood. So, yeah, I don't know, it's about, what is that?
12 by 12 or
yeah,
something?
Something like that. Yeah, 12 by 12. And then we have a stainless steel table where we can put fuels on. And then the fume has a draw so we can burn things and have the smoke be, you know, removed.
I mean, you like literally put some material on there and
yeah,
attach to it.
You want
to
see it?
Yeah.
Great.
Burn some stuff. What are these huge refrigerator-looking things?
Yeah, so these are drying ovens. So often, you know, we want to, remove some of the moisture before burning.
Oh, cool.
So that dries fuels. It also can tell us how much fuels is out in the woods. So typically you'll collect it out in the field, bring it back, dry it, and then weigh it, and then that's the amount of fuels you have in a given area, what's something we call fuel loading. So right here I have ponderosa pine needles.
I've got a whole grocery bag full of them here.
Basically what we see is the really long needles
allow the needles to kind of get hung up on each other, and then that promotes greater airflow through the fuel bed, and so that's what's going to contribute to pretty high flame lengths. And the other part of that is a lot of conifer species, pine species, have terpenes. These are chemical compounds that are highly volatile, adding to the flammability of these fuels. And then let me grab a... We'll be taking different measurements. So here I've just put a really large meter stick that's on a stand, and that'll allow us to get how high the flames, you know, tell us how tall the flames get. So what's the flame length? We'll also look at things like flaming time. How long does it take the flames to combust the material? How long will it smolder for? So flaming are the visible flames. Smoldering is the glowing combustion, those embers that you see following a fire.
So that can apply, like, how long hot spots are going to happen, maybe, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, generally what we see is that when we understand the flammability of all these different species, they kind of bear out into different, maybe, strategies or consistent groups, where you have these species that are really, really flammable, but not for a long duration. Then you have other species that are very flammable. They put a lot of energy out, but they're slower to combust. And then there's some species that just don't burn very well at all. Not so many of those in California, but there are some. Cool. All right, so
let's burn this puppy.
Yeah, I'm going to burn this. So I'm just igniting one little spot here. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, like immediately you got like 6-inch flames.
Yeah. And so once it gets into the heart of that fuel bed, we'll see much taller flames. Another thing we'll measure after combustion is gone through is how much mass is left. So how much consumption of that fuel did we get?
Okay.
Yeah.
But research in a controlled study cannot prepare you for the day when you face a wildfire head on.
Once I got home and I got out of my car and parked, I could hear propane tanks in the Paradise and Magalia area just exploding, and it just sounded what I would envision a war would sound like. It was just, you would just hear boom, and then a few minutes later, boom, and you could hear that coming over the ridge line.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll return to learn more about fire behavior outside of the classroom.